Hi, this is Dr. Kasia Kainz, and today we'll be mapping Epstein-Barr virus on the 15 Minutes Matrix.
Welcome to the 15-Minute Matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today on the 15-Minute Matrix, I'll be speaking with Dr. Kasia Kainz. Dr. Kainz is a doctor of clinical nutrition and the CEO of Holistic Nutrition Naturally and EBV Educational Institute. She's a board-certified nutrition specialist, a certified nutritionist, and has her master's in clinical nutrition from Bastyr University. She's the author of the Amazon best-selling book, The Epstein-Barr Virus Solution, which you can find linked in the show notes. Kasia also trains practitioners in EBV through an online clinical track program. Kasia has been in clinical practice since 2005, providing individualized support to nearly 2,000 clients, with EBV now being her main focus. After our time together today, you will certainly understand why. Welcome to the 15-Minute Matrix, Kasia.
Good morning.
So excited to talk with you. You have written an excellent book about Epstein-Barr virus, and we'll link to that in the show notes. And it's such an important topic for us to understand, as it leads to many other downstream conditions, and its presence is associated with a number of autoimmune conditions, as I'm sure we'll discuss. But can you start us off today, Kasia, by telling us a little bit more about the virus itself?
Well, the virus has been on the planet for about 1 million years, and it seems that it has mutated, perhaps to become a problem. Mm. And globally, we look at 90-95% of global population carrying it, and wow, much of the time it doesn't cause any problem. You know, we're host to so many microbes.
Right.
Many people will get mono or primary infection, maybe in infancy or childhood, can be transmitted during pregnancy. It's impossible not to contract it. You can get it through transfusion because blood is not tested. But for most people, it doesn't cause problems. It's the small percentage of population where it just doesn't turn off or keeps turning on and becomes chronic. And certain qualities of the virus, more than other viruses, can lead to autoimmunity in different directions, can lead to oncogenic processes, and definitely chronic fatigue. Mm. And, you know, the more I researched, the more blown away I was. At a certain time, I stopped researching and I had to, you know, I had to publish this book.
Yes. Yeah. And there's something I want to go back to, Kasia. Mm-hmm. So you said 90 to 95% of the population mm-hmm. carry it. I think we can all run away with facts like we did with genetic polymorphisms like MTHFR. And, you know, a large part of the population has it, and yet it's not necessarily expressed, but we correct. Hang so many hooks on it. So let's yes. get into the specifics of like a self-limiting or acute exposure or condition with EBV versus a chronic. First of all, can you articulate those differences, and also what happens to make an acute infection chronic in this instance?
Acute infection, you know, like flu. You get flu, it comes and goes. And we call it mononucleosis. Rheumatic fever is what it's called in some other countries. And so it should be self-limiting theoretically, but when it comes to mono, it's quite debilitating, and people often feel, you know, the expression that I hear all the time is, I feel like a truck ran me over. Mm. That's a big red flag. So it's a very bad flu that completely takes over to the point where college students have to take a semester off,
right.
And some people are bedridden and so on and so forth. So there is something in research called chronic mono syndrome, which means that underlying infection starts going starts going chronic, basically. It doesn't turn off, or most of the time it turns on again. So if you look at some research, they say, you know, you can spontaneously reactivate anytime. There's nothing spontaneous about it, in my view, because when I looked at research and factors that trigger reactivation, and I look at my population of patients, like, it's very predictable. But basically, you have a virus that infects your B cells, T cells as well, but B cells, B as in boy.
Yes.
So your basic immune cell. And then it manipulates the mechanisms by which the B cell lives, and to the point where it immortalizes those B cells. They can't perform apoptosis, and they cannot communicate to other immune cells externally that they're infected.
Right.
So you have these B cells that are factories for virons, and much of the time, if the person is healthier, has better stress management, is not better nutritional status, the virus will live in those B cells in a latent form, means between reactivations. And then
yes.
not much is going on during that time, but you have the whole machinery ready.
Yes.
When there are triggering events in a person's life, which are many, the lysing happens, and the factory starts manufacturing the virons using the DNA of the B cells, converting into RNA, and the virons are spilled and get into the bloodstream. So if people want to know if their terrible symptoms that they're suffering from out of the blue are driven by EBV, they need to test immediately, because you want to test the antibodies right where during the time when the virons are spilling
active.
And they're in the bloodstream.
Right. So I want to back up a little bit, and there's a number of things that you said that I want to kind of double click on here. And I just want to presence that, you know, in Functional Nutrition Lab, we go deep into the function of the immune system. And what you're talking mm-hmm. about with the B cells here is the adaptive immune system. And so when we have the immune system that we've developed over time and it's misbehaving, all mm-hmm. sorts of havoc can happen. And that mm-hmm. is due to the presence of the virus. So one mm-hmm. thing I want to ask you, and again, there's a number of things that I want to go back to, but are there some things, if we think about antecedents, that make certain people more susceptible to the chronic EBV versus being able to limit its activity?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Talking about the immune cells, there's a lot of hypotheses. One of them is a CD8 plus T cell deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Any suppression in the immune system for any
right.
reason. So mm-hmm. Immunosuppressive medications. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing is that if you look at nutritional status of an individual, when the nutritional status starts dropping, viruses become more virulent.
Mm-hmm.
So B cells, B cells, T cells are one group of cells that are attacked, but there's one more huge, NF-kappa-B, the inflammatory marker.
Yeah.
That particular one is hijacked by the virus. NF-kappa-B is so responsive to the dietary changes.
Mm.
So it's very easy fix, just, you know, very, very easy. There's so many studies on what can curb NF-kappa-B, just very simple foods, herbs, anti-inflammatory spices. But just one fast food joint meal, there was a study, it increased NF-kappa-B by 150% within the first 1 hour or two. So just being mindful of that, it's a huge impact on the virus.
So that if we move then to that realm of triggers in the story mm-hmm. section of the arena, mm-hmm. you're talking about, you know, there's the exposure, which we can kind of think of as a given, like the exposure might be a given. But then we have low nutritional status, we have immune suppression, likely even immune dysfunction if there's already the presence of some autoimmune factors. What else might serve as a trigger that leads to that that proliferation of the virus? I mean, I'm assuming stress and what other factors?
So yeah, I'm going to go over all of that. So let's jump in. The first one is chemical exposure. And I think studies have not caught up with a variety of toxins, and some of them man-made. But there are studies that are very clear. Cigarette smoke is one of them that can literally reactivate EBV. Dioxins are very well studied. Dioxins are very interesting and very relevant. And then diesel exhaust. In terms of dioxins, we don't appreciate that we can get them from any burning debris. So if people have wood burning fires, if there are, you know, we experience a lot of forest burning in British Columbia and Washington, California. And also fireworks, I realize that fireworks also contain dioxins, and these stay in the air for another 10 days or so, according to one study. So when I realized that last summer, I actually sent a lot of messages, Facebook lives, just alerting people in my community and different communities, like, listen, do not watch the fireworks in open air if you have chronic EBV because of this, and also be mindful if the forests are burning, you may reactivate. And I have to tell you, I got so much response with people saying, now I understand what happened that 5 days ago. I started to really spiral again, and I didn't know what it was. Mm. It's very empowering because dioxin is in a lot of situations, it's a very practical thing to know. So I find that environmental triggers are huge, and we just, you know, the research has not caught up. But with the same, in the same direction, one of the bigger environmental triggers that is underappreciated, you probably appreciated, is electromagnetic exposure.
Yes.
There was a very obsolete study from 1990s that looked at the very conservative exposure and triggering early antigen reactivation, and that was the equivalent to a stationary computer, not Wi-Fi. That was before Wi-Fi, and then there was a study on mercury exposure. It was mimicking what a person would have in the mouth sitting at the computer by Wi-Fi. Just the exposure to electromagnetic field was triggering the release of vapors, I think, from mercury. And then I found some studies saying that mercury in particular has affinity for viruses.
Wow.
And so there's that loop between, you know, how susceptible we are, how many fillings you have in your mouth, and then how much time you spend, how close to electromagnetic field routers exposure you are. But we're stewing in it now.
Kasha, your book is so, there's so much information, and there's a few other things I know I want to touch on. So I just want to think into, like, quickly, if we were to fill the triggers arena, there's so much you're talking about. There's the immunosuppression, there's the EMFs, there are the toxins, particularly heavy metals, nutritional status, other environmental toxins. I'm assuming stress and hormone issues, and also, like we said, co-infections and other autoimmune conditions.
All of these. All of these are big.
So where do we go? What are we looking for with testing?
Testing is tricky. I have a whole page on the website, ebvhelp.com, explaining different variations of scenarios with tests. They're not 100%, you know, perfect in terms of a human being and how to work with a person. So look at a person and the timeline and the story. And the matrix,
of course,
and then look at the lab. Because with the lab, the most important one, most people will have VCAIgG elevated and NAIgG elevated. These are for life, and it's a good thing. You know, we've had exposure and so on and so forth. If it's triple digits or more than 600, for example, it could be 5,000. So that's, if it's more than the range when they assign a number, it's a problem. But that may not mean that you're sick. you always will have the virus. You can't eradicate it completely. It's always going to be there. It doesn't mean it's going to kill you or do damage. But the point of testing is to test when you're really sick, because the early antigen, EA, that's the one that you want to have flagged positive. You will know that you are reactivated right now. Right. If your VCA-IgM is positive, it's probably your first run. Yes.
Yeah. Let's just move into mediators. It's, you know, I think of the mediators as part of the story. It's what we do to help ourselves feel better or reactivate things. And you spoke into it so beautifully with the fireworks and the forest fires, because the more that patients know about their or our mediators, the more in control we are. It's such a relief to know, oh, that's what's going on. And of course, the skills, the mediators relate directly to the right side of the matrix. What do we do day in and day out? So what can be done, without giving too much away from your book because it's so comprehensive, but that might be a non-negotiable for us to be thinking about with our clients or patients? What would fall into the, this is a non-negotiable?
I would say the biggest number one always in research and in my practice is stress. And it is environmental stress, emotional stress, spiritual stress, not having a voice, bad relationships, too many changes, being depleted, inflammatory stress, but emotional, personal stress, losses, personal losses, huge. That is the tipping point. That's a given. And with that comes sleep. That's right there. You don't sleep, you have stress, and the whole pattern repeats. And people often wake up in the middle of the night.
Yes.
They can't go to sleep. That's a big, a huge chapter on that. So just learning how to work with glucose and sugar and brain chemistry and dinners and, you know, just the glucose regulation, adrenal support, huge.
Yeah, it's Kasia, if you're not sleeping, pooping, and your blood sugar is dysregulated, you can't go any further. Those are non-negotiables, right?
Non-negotiable. Two poops a day, absolutely. So we need roughage. We need roughage.
Yes.
And the diet that is more sustainable, I hate to call it a diet, but really I would steer clinicians away from relying excessively on autoimmune paleo or high fat, ketogenic.
Yes.
You know,
too restrictive. Really, they start to induce their own deficiencies, right?
Yes. We really need roughage. We really need antioxidants, and we really need fruits and vegetables and fruits. And the my clinical concern is we created a fruitophobic clinical community.
Yes.
And that backfires constantly. So the fruits shouldn't be restricted unless they actually have to be for any reason periodically. But they give us the most for the buck in terms of the antioxidant amount and quality. And antioxidants fight the virus. The higher your antioxidant status, the more normal you will be.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Kasia. I think it's important that we understand that when we're looking at dietary protocols, that they're not meant to be long-term. And I think we've run away with this in our cultural promotion of these restrictive diets, that people are doing them for long periods of time. And again, what Kasia and I are talking about is the fact that these restricted diets start to induce their own deficiencies. But as you said really well, they should be used if necessary periodically. So I think that that's a point to stress. Any final non-negotiable before we let you go and all go get your book into our hands?
Non-negotiables, I think on a deeper level, and hear me on this, is spirituality and joy. I have a last chapter is on joy. My mentor actually contributed, because as a, especially for women, you need to have your voice and you need to follow your heart. You need to have space and time to nourish your soul, your spirit, grow it, and do the things that you were called to do on this planet. We all have that beautiful task and love inside. When you're so sick, you don't think about it, but women stretch too much and overstretch to help others. And sometimes EBD is a great teacher, because you really have to slow down, respect the physicality limitations of your body, but then you won't heal unless you address the things missing in your life in terms of joy, you know, simple things to bring you joy. I think that's really, really important.
Kindred spirit, Kasha. Love it. You couldn't have ended on a better note. Thank you so much joining us and for your really powerful work. Make sure we link to the book in the show notes as well as your website so people can look more into the testing. Such an important topic to explore. Thank you again.
You're welcome, and keep up the wonderful work you're doing for all of us.
Thank you. The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes my son, Gilbert Nakayama, on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear more episodes at 15minutematrix.com. And if you'd like to be notified each time there's a new podcast episode, please go to 15minutematrix.com/notify. Once you let us know you'd like to know about the new episodes, we'll be sure to drop into your inbox with a super short reminder that a new episode is ready and waiting for you. Plus, we do want to hear from you. You have an open invitation to email us. We want to know who you'd like to hear on the podcast and what you'd like to see mapped on the 15-Minute Matrix. You can always email us at ask@15minutematrix.com. That's ask@15minutematrix.com.